Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Truth Seekers, welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. You ready to think, everybody? Glad you could join us tonight. Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m. here on WCAP Radio. Offering a little sanity in our age of insanity, a little life in our culture of death. Well, tonight, ladies and gentle things, we delve beneath the surface on the topic of objectifying persons and humanizing animals. Yes, objectifying persons and humanizing animals seems to be happening a lot lately, and there seems to be a correlation between the two. And to help us beneath the surface try to untangle that entire topic, there he is, your guest and mine, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
Paul, I decided that I would try something new tonight.
What might that be?
Whatever position you take, I'm going to just take the opposite position.
Is that right?
I thought of it in the car, but yeah. I don't know if that's really the best way to go, but I thought I might try it. I don't think I've ever done that before.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason,
I don't know if I could do it.
Cindy, I'm hearing him as distortion-y, and me, I don't hear. You want him to do another microphone? All right, why don't you grab another microphone?
No, River.
Yeah.
I'll try microphone. Is this microphone
one? Oh,
that
sounds better, yeah.
I don't hear myself.
No, you sound better, and I don't.
You sound good.
I sound
fabulous.
How do I sound?
Here we are. Technical difficulties are
here we
finished.
Come.
No more difficulties. 978-454-4980 is the Beneath the Surface hotline. If you want to join our convo tonight, it's 978-454-4980 on objectifying persons and humanizing animals. Speaking of persons, there's a person behind the glass. Cindy, how was your week? Yep, you have to get on. I'm putting pressure on you.
Putting her on the spot.
On the spot.
Busy.
I'm telling you.
Busy? Why was your week so busy?
Stop.
Doesn't stop? No? Have you tried to stop it?
You can't stop the world.
You can't stop the world. Yeah.
I've tried.
Maybe if we call everyone in the world to just push as hard as we can to in one side of the world, maybe we could stop it from spinning.
Isn't that what you don't want it
to turn upside down.
No, I don't want that to happen.
Or break. You don't want to break
it. I kind of just want it to stop spinning for a little bit.
Yeah, we need an astronomer to call us and tell us what happens, what would happen if the world stopped spinning. And could that even happen?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what will probably happen. Yeah. All of us would probably go flying into space.
Yeah, well, if it stopped abruptly. What if it gradually slowed down over the course of a week?
I think that if it went fast, we'd probably throw up.
Yeah, but if it did stop very gradually, Well, it would be something like the dark side of the moon. If you're on the other, if it's nighttime,
yeah,
it'll just continue to just. I don't know.
It would be dark forever.
Dark forever and cold.
What's the relation between the spinning of the planet and gravity? Would we just float off into space?
Well,
I'm completely out of my element here. I don't really know.
Yeah, that's an actually interesting question.
Yeah, because what's interesting is if the Earth is spinning, you would think that centrifugal force would shoot us off, right? Sort of like if you have a wet rope and you swing it over your head, the water sprays out, right?
Well,
why aren't we spraying out?
There's centrifugal force and there's centrifugal force, right?
Centrifugal and centripetal.
Centripetal force. That's the one I'm thinking of.
And I don't know if I'm pronouncing them correctly.
We
need a pronunciator on the show.
Perhaps the second force there is what keeps us on the ground.
Yeah, there's gravity.
You know how
right?
you spin something and in the middle of it, it remains, even though the outside...
At the center.
Well, anyway, we should go beneath the surface with a scientist or two.
Physicist. Let's get some scientists.
If you are a physicist out there, I'd love to have you on beneath the surface to talk about questions like this.
That'd be great.
So give me a call or contact me. My Facebook page for Beneath the Surface is facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers, all one word. So go to that page and make a comment.
Love to hear from that.
All right. So, Mr. Kent.
Yep.
First of all, before I even ask that, I was going to ask the question. This is my second question, so don't answer it, all right?
So, we're going to have the question, and then we're going to have a prequel?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Very good. The question is there a correlation, a relationship of some way between objectifying persons and humanizing animals in our society today? But here's the prequel. I think we need to define our terms here, objectifying and humanizing. When you I think we need to define persons, too. What is a person?
My knee-jerk reaction is to go to a religious explanation, which one who is in the image and likeness of God. But specifically, that would be a human person, because there are divine persons, according to the Catholic faith, and they're not in the image and likeness of God. They are God.
Yeah.
Right.
And there are angelic persons.
And there are angelic persons, too,
so
who are not in the image and likeness of God.
If I could help you out, a person, I would say, simply, to boil it down, is a subject.
I was going to say that next. See, now you're getting philosophical. I was doing the theological.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I love the way you say it. I just wanted to interrupt.
You're funny. A subject with intellect and will. So, angels are subjects with intellect and will, and obviously God has the eternal and infinite perfect mind and will.
You might want to define subject, because I think when most of us hear the word subject, we think math, history, science, literature, those are subjects.
Yeah. A being that is able to have self-consciousness and call itself by the letter I in the English language.
Yeah.
What is that mysterious I?
Yeah.
That denotes personhood. So, in other words, I'm not just an object. I am a free, rational being.
Right. Self-reflective, with deliberation, right? You can deliberate things. You can consider things.
So we have reason and free will. Aristotle called us, the human being is a rational animal.
What was his last name, by the way?
I don't know.
All right.
Boethius said something like the human being is, or the person is a, how did he put it? A being, oh gosh, it's on the tip of my tongue, of a rational, a substance of a rational nature or something like that. But we are a being with self-consciousness and the ability to reason and to choose freely, and hence we are free and deliberate persons. Right? So we're subjects with intellect and will. Now, the contrary of subject is object.
Right.
So when you objectify a human being, you are, in effect, depersonalizing them in your mind.
Right. It's not a person.
Right?
Right.
And when you depersonalize a human being, what are you left with? A physiological body, that acts on impulse only, mm-hmm. and hence you are, in a sense, animalizing a human being.
Right.
Yes?
Right, right. Which is, I go to the theological presentation of this in the book of Genesis. So you have man and animals, humans and animals, created on the same day. However, humans are described as being in the image and likeness of God,
yes.
and they're sort of exalted to share in this divine rest on the seventh day. The animals are left behind on the sixth day to show that distinction. A, they're not in the image and likeness of God, and B, they don't have that divine rest.
And the reason is because that divine rest denotes the eternal Sabbath, the
right.
never-ending Sabbath, which we call heaven. And because animals are not persons, they don't have a spiritual component that survives physical or bodily death.
Although they have souls, but as Aristotle would say, there are different kinds of souls, and only human, angelic, and divine souls are eternal.
And the reason is because they're spiritual, which means they're substantial. Mm. An animal soul is a mortal soul, which means it's simply a life principle.
Yeah, it's biological.
It's a life principle, but it's not substantial in and of itself.
Yeah, Aquinas... Did I say Aristotle before? I meant Aquinas. Aquinas also said that even plants have souls, but
right.
he called them vegetative souls. They just grow.
Right. That's because souls are the form of the body that is its life principle.
So, right. So if there's life, there's a soul, but that doesn't mean all souls are the same type of soul.
Right. And there's only one, again, immortal soul, because the only spiritual soul is that which is in a person, because there's a component within the person that is able to act and behave and operate over and above or transcendence of his physiological dimension.
Sure.
Whereas animals and plants do not have that component.
Right. They do what they need to do to survive.
Right. Instinctually.
Right.
So we understand what person is, and we know what we're talking about when we're saying objectifying persons, at least in our minds. You can never actually do it, but we're doing it in our minds.
We're treating them like objects.
Yeah, when we depersonalize them, we are making them into an object. And why do you do that? For the sake of selfishness, right?
Sure.
Usually for
right.
pleasure, sometimes for money, or what have you. It's right. for some selfish motive.
Some sort of gratification.
Yeah.
Right.
So, objectifying persons and humanizing animals.
Sure. Yep. One of the things that I understand where these people are coming from, but whenever people would see me with my children, I shouldn't say whenever, but many times when people would see me with my children, they would say, oh, we never had any kids, but we have dogs.
Right.
And they're just like family members. They're just like, that's my baby. These are just my babies. And I think to myself, I'm glad you love your dog. I'm glad your dog gives you all kinds of pleasure. And they sure do, right? Dogs can be great. Cats can be great. However, boy, you don't raise a dog the same way you raise a kid. You don't raise a dog for the same reasons that you raise a kid. And a kid doesn't look at you the way a dog looks at you, and vice versa. A dog doesn't conceive of you the way a kid conceives of you.
Well, it's interesting you mention this, because one of the reasons why I suggested this topic and you heartily agreed to it is because I do a once a semester poll to my college age students. It relates to, well, let me just say what the question was this semester. It was, if you saw out in the ocean that your dog, your pet dog that you love, and a stranger were drowning. Now, they weren't right in the same place, but they were in two different places, both of which you could get to. They were both drowning, and you were the only one there. There was no lifeguard, and you could only save one. And you could save one, but only one. And you have to make a decision. Do you save your pet dog, or do you save the stranger? Most, in fact, this semester was pretty bad. Almost all of my students, my college-age students, chose the dog to save.
Hmm.
And then I started probing them, of course. I challenged them. And basically, the bottom line is, what is important to these college students today is not the value of the being per se, but the emotional attachment that they as an individual have to the being. So if they have more of an emotional attachment to their animal, which they do, than a stranger who they don't know, they would save the stranger and let, excuse me, they would save their dog and let the stranger perish. This is getting, it seems to be getting more and more in that direction every time I take this poll.
Yeah, I think it indicates a couple of things. Number one, we've, as you've sort of titled the show, we've lost the sense of what it means to be human as distinguished from any other animal. And number two, things external to us only have value to the extent that I myself value them.
Yeah.
So it's very self-centered way of looking at things. It doesn't even have to be a dog, right? If my iPad was sinking in the ocean and that's very important to me, would I save that over a human being, right?
Mm.
And I wonder if that's the direct, why? Because we're not thinking about the nature of the iPad or the nature of the stranger. We're thinking about my feelings.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. We're becoming more and more feelings oriented. And the question of objective value doesn't even cross their minds.
Right, right. Which, the value something has regardless of others' opinions or feelings about it.
Yeah, because I think more and more people are learning through the means that we have in our culture, unfortunately, that there is no objective truth, and hence there is no objective value. Right. So all that matters is how things affect me.
Sure. This has been a long time coming.
I'm telling you. Let's talk a lot more about this and what we do about it. 978-454-4980. Our phone number, you're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. My guest, Kent Niebuhr. I'm Paul Morano. You are you, and we'll all be back together right after this. Oh, I like this. Leave it to Cindy to choose the appropriate song. All right, there we are. 978-454-4980 is the phone number here at Beneath the Surface on WCAP. Paul Morano here with my guest this week, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. And we are talking about the topic of objectifying persons and humanizing animals. A corresponding movement that seems to be occurring more and more in our day as people call their animals family members, and people are no longer pet owners, but they're pet parents, etc., etc. And correspondingly, Mr. Kent, it seems like that we are depersonalizing and becoming, and at least in our minds, more and more like animals as they become more and more like persons.
Sure, yeah, we tend to behave more and more like animals. It seems as time goes on, and maybe I'm just generalizing of the development of this over time, but it seems that you look at marketing and so on, and it really appeals to what used to be called our base desires, the lowest sort of impulses, the lowest sort of desires that we have, you know, the appetites, as they were.
Yes.
Which animals have appetites, obviously.
Nobody has
to make that argument. Humans have them too. But we seem to be yanked around by those who appeal to our appetites. And we respond accordingly. They've done their homework, they've done their research, and they see that this is what gets people moving. You appeal to their appetites, you get a response. You get the response you're looking for. You provide a product at the intersection there, and
psychological manipulation is very interesting. It seems like there are two basic groups of people in society that do this regularly, and that is sales and politics.
I was going to say that, right? Yeah. Politics, if you didn't
sales,
go there.
Sales
right.
and politics.
Right.
Our business and politics.
Sure.
And, of course, mass media has to do with both of those things.
Yep.
Without mass media, mass media magnifies this problem of appealing to our lower nature in order to grab us, make us even obsessed or perhaps even addicted, in order to consume their products so they can take advantage of us.
Yeah, and, you know, it seems that one of the interesting things that is a part of all this is that we tend to act in a way that is what you'd call self-preservation. We're motivated by what will either just help us to survive or will advance us vis-a-vis someone else, or, you know, it's sort of a competitive spirit that I need to make sure that I'm taken care of before anyone else is taken care of, which really runs contrary to any sense of sacrifice for the good of another. You know, it'd kind of be interesting. I'd love to see some statistics, you know, with the dollars adjusted for the, you know, inflation of charitable giving between, you know, I don't know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and now. Are we less charitable now than we may have been in another day and age? That'd be an interesting angle to take on this matter.
That's a good question, but I'd like to delve beneath the surface with you on the cause and hence the correlation. In other words, the cause of, or at least one of the primary causes of this movement towards objectifying persons, and the correlation it has with humanizing animals. Now, we talked about, you and I, a little bit on text earlier today about the sexual harassment scandals that are opening up. Every time you turn on the news, there's a new one. They're usually of the progressive liberal bent, one or two conservatives, but mainly the spotlight is being no longer is being hid purposely from these sexual harassers, and so much is coming out. and you and I talked about how this relates in a way to it relates in a way to the sexual revolution, even though these
incidents
are being spotlighted because allegedly the women did not consent to the matter.
Right.
But just the notion of not understanding what human sexuality is and
right.
the very gift that a human person is one to another sort of is the underlying problem here that makes consent the primary focus rather than the secondary focus.
Sure.
In other words, doing good and avoiding what is bad for people is not the primary focus. It's whether or not you consent or not for me to use you.
Yeah, right. Do you consent me to?
Yeah.
Do you consent to me using you?
And for the first time in history, it seems like it has become popular to consent to being used in a way that we haven't seen this in history.
Paul, name that tune. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share.
I don't know. Is that a song?
Yeah, it is. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared.
So, all right, who's the part?
We were getting our share, working on the night moves.
Oh, really? Wow.
Bob Seger, Night Moves.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So that song's, what, 30 years old, 35 years old right now?
Yeah.
There you were at the sort of, you know, sexual revolution in full swing, right? Mid-70s or so, right? 75 to 80, somewhere around there.
Yes.
And here's Bob Seger. I mean, it couldn't be more explicit than that. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share. So here you have the sexual revolution. Here's a quibble I have, though. I can't look at the sexual revolution and call it a cause of this attitude, because the sexual revolution was really an unleashing of this attitude. The attitude was there. It may have been repressed or something, and then...
Well, I mean, you have to go back to the Garden of Eden to find the cause.
Right, right. So you have this again, humans created on the same day as animals, showing that there's a correlation, a similarity between humans and animals.
Yep.
But there, then there's a distinction between humans and animals. And so that commonality... Yeah, right. Yeah. That commonality with animals was always there.
Yeah.
But if you forget what might be called your higher self, if you neglect your higher self, then what you're left with is simply animalistic impulses, animalistic desires.
And what's interesting about humans is that we can be a lot better than animals or a lot worse than animals.
Yeah, right.
Because the impulses that we have, I mean, usually animals just act on impulse, and when the impulse is satisfied, they continue on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's all to survive.
Right.
We can be extremely hedonistic. We can go much past that.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the advertisers and the psychological and emotional manipulators seek for us to do that.
Sure.
So that they can make money off us.
Yeah, supersize me, right? So the idea that you don't want to just eat, you know, I don't know, what is it, 6 ounces of French fries? You want to eat 12 ounces of French fries, you know? And you would keep going if there were more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Same with both sensual appetites of the human person.
Sure.
Both food and sex.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
978-454-4980, the BTS hotline. Going beneath the surface on the topic of objectifying persons and humanizing animals. And so, Kent, we seem to live in a culture today that, as long as there is consent, everything is okay.
Right.
Morality is based on that one bottom line ethic,
consent.
Adult consent or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the question of whether something is good for somebody or not has taken a back seat, if not completely disappeared.
Right.
And so the notion of, even if somebody consents, you should not do what is bad for them.
Right.
Has fallen on deaf ears, and people don't even understand that concept of good anymore.
Right. Right. Because we've had relativism, which defines good as whatever you like.
Yeah.
So if we can't have a concept of treating others right, because all it comes down to is what I like and what the other person likes. So if we both like
and if I can manipulate them into liking what I like,
then that's good enough.
And isn't that what so much of the problem today is all about in these sexual harassment cases that have been happening in the past couple of months?
Sure.
That's you know, it's a he said she said thing. That the focus is on, well, you know, she consented to it, and his goal was always to try to somehow manipulate her to consent to it.
Sure.
And her memory is, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Instead of the focus being on, we should act human.
Yeah, the act itself is wrong.
The act in and of itself good for us or bad for us?
Right.
Not whether somebody consented or not. That's
sure.
important, but it's secondary. Yeah.
Now, I definitely understand why the sexual revolution seems to be such a focal point with this. Because before the sexual revolution, and I'm going to get even more specific, before artificial birth control, there were consequences to sexual relations,
yes.
meaning a baby, right? A woman would say to a man, generally speaking, I'm not going to let you near me until you marry me. Because the consequences of letting you near me means I could end up with a baby, and I don't want to be an unwed mother. I don't want to be raising a child by myself. I need the support of an intact family, right?
So, I would say that there were three fears in previous generations.
Yeah.
Fear of pregnancy.
Yeah.
No question. Fear of hell. Because people were more religious, and they were more God-centered than self-centered. And fear, or more generally speaking, fear of God, you could say.
Yep.
And the third fear, and this, of course, was more to the young than to the older adults, fear of parents.
Yeah, right.
Because parents used to be very much more discipline-oriented, and you didn't want to disappoint your parents.
Right.
And, of course, getting pregnant or even having sexual relations before marriage in generations previous to ours was extremely disappointing for most parents.
Right.
And so those three fears, you could say, for a lot of people today are gone.
Right.
And the most practical, if you will, are the most tangible fear you mentioned, the physiological one.
Right.
If sexual relations, its natural end is pregnancy.
Yeah, and so you have...
And you had an excuse for...
Exactly. A woman had an excuse for saying no, because I might get pregnant.
Yeah.
And nowadays, or ever since, you know, well, like 50 years now, almost 50 years now, you get the advent of the birth control pill, women no longer have an excuse to say no.
Yes. Yes. And without that excuse, the more that sexual sin took hold in our culture, the more and more intellectually and spiritually blind we became.
Yeah.
And therefore, the fear of God, you know, just like Adam and Eve, when they sinned, they hid in the woods. We have a whole culture that began to hide in the woods from God, and they lost sight of God.
Sure.
So that fear of God was gone after the fear of pregnancy took root.
Now, I do want to clarify one thing, though.
What's that?
When I said a minute ago, women don't have an excuse anymore, that's if you take away the very concept that sex outside of marriage is okay.
That's right.
Sex is intended to take place within marriage, right?
Why?
Getting back to the reason why women could object and say, you know, no, I'm not letting you near me because I could have a baby. Because you can't separate the act of sex with the potential for having children.
So just like the act of eating, the natural end of eating is digestion and nutrition, which is life of the individual.
Right.
The natural end of sex is impregnation.
Right. Well, and there's a supernatural end
The life of the family and the species.
Right.
Now, it's not coincidental that you brought up birth control at the beginning of this conversation, because this was supposed to be the panacea that enabled us to act against our nature,
right,
and like a sexual bulimia, just to impede the natural end of sex so that people can have this kind of sensual pleasure at will.
Right.
Without consequence.
So in other words, what it did was it reduced sex to sensual pleasure.
Yes.
And it removed the bonding that goes along with the physical act. So there's the physical act with the physical pleasure, but then there's the emotional and psychological bonding that goes on within the act and following the act.
And the physiological bonding.
And the third one is the physiological bonding. And so what we've taken away the physiological bonding.
Oh, we've ignored it. Ignored and denied.
Right. We've ignored and denied the physiological. We've ignored and denied the emotional, psychological.
Right.
And all we're left with is the physical sensation.
Yes.
That goes with it. So what you have is abusers abusing. Okay. And all that they can say, the only way they can get out of it being considered abuse is what we've been talking about, consent.
Right. So if you consent to abuse...
It's not abuse.
In today's relativistic, utilitarian mindsets, we don't call it abuse anymore.
Right. We call it consensual relations.
Yes. More on this, much more. And its correlation with our humanizing animals, or personalizing animals.
Yeah.
Here at WCAP, you're listening to Beneath the Surface. As always, Mondays from 10 to 11. I'm Paul Morano. My guest is Kent Niebuhr. We will talk to you again in a moment right after this break. Back 978-454-4980. Talking to my guest here on Beneath the Surface, talking to Kent Niebuhr about the movement of objectifying persons and humanizing animals. So before the break, Kent, we were talking about how contraception created a culture that uses people, by and large.
Yeah.
That it seeks to negate the procreative or the natural end of human sexuality. And in doing so, it negates the personal meaning of the objective personal meaning of human sexuality, which is love.
Right.
So when you neglect life, you neglect love, and vice versa.
Sure.
Because love, by its very nature, is life-giving.
Right.
Just as God is both life and love, so too, as His image, we must recognize that life and love are one. All right, that's my philosophical tidbit for the day. But do you see now an understanding of why that if you negate the natural end, which many people have been doing with our contraception mentality, and have your 1.3 kids, as our society and most of Western culture is propagating today, there is a void. There is a void of love and nurturing, particularly in women, that need to be, because there is a lack of children, that need to be redirected somewhere. And it seems like that redirection, that need that is being redirected, is being redirected from children to animals. And hence, women are calling their pet dogs or cats their babies, and treating them and talking about them as if they truly are their human children.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not uncommon at all. And I think that there were many conversations I had as a stay-at-home dad where I would be taking my little children. My children are growing up very fast, so that my youngest is now 6. So I don't really have really little children anymore, but when all my children were really little, I'd take them to activities, and I would mostly be surrounded by moms who were taking their little ones to activities, and they would say, "How many kids do you have?" And we ended up with 7, but you know, I might have 5, let's say, at the time. And that was always remarkable to people. Even when I had like 3, that was remarkable to people. But there were lots of people with 3, or there were several people, families I'd run into with 3. But once you start hitting 4, and then 5, you're just in another league. And now we ended up with 7. But a lot of women would say to me, "Oh, I wanted to have more kids, but my husband didn't want to."
Yeah.
And so you had all these women who were really disappointed wives because they were frustrated mothers.
Yeah.
They wanted more babies.
Yeah.
And their husbands wouldn't consent. Mm. And why is that? They could easily set, you could think of a million reasons, rational reasons not to have babies, right? We can't afford it. We're too busy. We don't have the time. We don't have the room. Our house is too small. All these.
We live in the richest country in the world.
Yeah.
And
and we have the lowest birth rate.
Right. Well, one of them anyway, yeah.
But you can always back it up by saying, just use birth control.
Yeah. Right. And it being culturally accepted.
Sure.
Without people having a strong faith in God,
right.
The culture becomes the God, in a
sense.
I
can't tell you how many people think there's something wrong with us because we have more than 1.3 children. Or let's say 3, right? There's an excuse in our society for having 3 children. If you have 2 boys or 2 girls, you're allowed to try once more.
Yeah, isn't it silly?
To see if you can get, you know, the other kind.
Yeah.
But then after 3, you know, you really just have to give up. If you get 3 girls or 3 boys, you just have to leave it at that.
It's very sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. So our first child was a girl, our second child was a boy.
Notice how that mentality that you just said was self-serving.
Exactly.
If the parents are fulfilled with somebody of each sex,
right,
and they don't want any more, that's all that matters.
You know, it's funny. I remember someone saying that to me. They said, "Oh, yeah, we have a boy and a girl, and we're happy with that. We're satisfied with that." And I thought to myself, you know, they're children, not dessert.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's not like, you know, did you like the pie?
Yes.
Yes. Would you like another piece? No, thank you. I'm
satisfied. Yes.
No. They're human beings.
Yeah,
right. You know, and if someone looks at me and says, "Oh, you have too many kids," I want to turn to them and say, "Okay, which ones should I eliminate?"
Sure.
Which, I have 7 kids, that's too many. Which ones should we knock off? They realize...
And by the way, they never suggest themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always the children that should go.
Yeah,
Right.
Yeah.
So they realize, though, the absurdity of what they're saying. But and what they retreat back to, what they fall back on is, well, you know, no, that would be wrong to kill them, but you shouldn't have had them in the first place.
Right.
And so my question is, well, how do you avoid having them? Well, you can, there's always abortion, in which case you're killing them. And then there's yep. always artificial birth control. Well, guess what? Artificial birth control, one of the ways in which it functions is to kill the baby in utero before it's called an abortifacient.
Yes, many of these hormonal and chemical drugs that
right.
women use without even realizing it are abortifacients.
Exactly.
But
anyway, we're getting off on another
topic.
But again, it's looking at your own children as objects. It's like, I once saw a comedian back in the 80s who said, you know, I just had my first child, this beautiful girl, or as we say here in L.A., I accessorized. So in other words, it's like, you know, you get your BMW, you get your Gucci handbag, and you get your child.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's just another thing, another object in your collection of collections.
Interesting. So it extends, you're saying, to objectifying children.
Yeah, right. Even parents objectifying their own children.
Right, right. So do you see that correlation that I was making with the lack of children, that love and nurturing of women are being redirected to pets?
Right.
They go get themselves a little lap dog or something?
And what's interesting is it's not redirected towards their husbands, because my theory, my hypothesis
true.
Is yes. this. Yeah. They resent their husbands.
Yes.
Because they're not having babies.
That's right.
Their husbands won't consent to having
right.
babies, so they resent their husbands. So they're not
they
going to love their husbands. They're either just going to get the pets and love their pets, they're going to have affairs, or they're going to divorce their husband and go find some other husband who'll love them. And you know. But I think, in general, men have fallen down on the job, and we won't consent to having, you know, more than one or two children. And so if one woman is displeased with one man for not agreeing to have three or four or more children, she's probably not going to find another man who'll consent to it.
Yeah.
So she gets a dog.
We have we've come to value things and objects more than people, or we've come to devalue people and making them objects.
Right.
And I think that's basically what you're saying. We're objectifying people.
And it's very easy to do, right? Just as I was saying before, you know, the husband who says, no, we don't have enough money, we can't afford another child, we don't have the time, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see how the concern for providing for your family is legitimate.
Yeah.
But when you're thinking, you know, we can't have another child, we only have one BMW. Your concern is not providing for your family at that point, right?
Right.
You've
right.
gone overboard.
Right. So give me the, explain to me the correlation between objectifying persons and humanizing animals.
Yeah. If humans see each other as objects, then you, knowing you are not an object, aren't being treated in the way you long to be treated. You know, before I was a Catholic, one of the things that really stood out to me that led me to be a Catholic was the idea, you know, we mentioned Aristotle before. Aristotle said, all human beings seek to be happy.
Yeah.
And I started thinking, what is this happiness? What is it? What is this happiness that humans seek? I just wanted to go beneath the surface, Paul Morano.
Yes.
And so what I came up with is happiness means, for human beings, to love and to be loved. And if the other person... if the other person in your life sees you as an object, they are incapable of loving you.
Right.
You can't
right.
love an object. Like we say, I love pizza.
Yeah.
But I would not, you know, throw myself on a hand grenade
right.
to help to save the life of a pizza.
Of a pizza.
Right?
Right.
So when we say I love pizza, we're talking about an object that gives us pleasure.
Yeah, we really mean I desire pizza.
Right. So
yeah.
nowadays, since we've kind of...
But that's what we've been doing with people.
We've
I desire
human
people.
Beings.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is I love you the same way
I love
pizza.
Right.
And so right. if you're listening to this, you're thinking, I'm not a pizza.
Yeah.
I'm a human being. I deserve, you know, love that is self-sacrificial. I deserve the kind of love where someone pours their life into me, devotes their life to me.
And here comes this nice, cute dog that wags its tail.
Yeah.
That gives you all the affection
that you
want.
Follows you around, jumps up in your lap.
And it doesn't have any of the negatives.
Yeah, it jumps up and down when you walk in the door.
Of the purposeful selfishness that human beings
have. Exactly. Right.
So here you have the object that you're going to redirect your love.
Right.
But it's a personal love that you're redirecting to a non-personal being.
Exactly. Right.
And that, tell me why that doesn't work.
It doesn't work because it can't be reciprocated, right?
Well, somebody will tell you that their dog absolutely reciprocates their love. How would you respond to them?
So, what you have is the type of love that you have for a dog. Love ought to be fruitful. Love ought to cause some kind of a growth. Love ought to cause some kind of a multiplication. If love is life-giving,
yeah,
where is the life that's generated between a human and a dog?
So it's, in other words, it's all completely one-sided? That you're giving love?
You know, here's how I want to put that. It's one-sided in two directions. Right? So you're kind of trying to love a dog the way you ought to love a human, and the dog's just loving you as if you were another dog.
So then, are people mixing up affection with love?
Yeah. So you have affection where there's pleasure in each other.
Emotionally.
Yeah. Emotional pleasure.
Temporary emotions.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
Which is good. Our emotions are great. They're not, you know, mistakes. They're not erroneous. However, if that's all there is, it's only part of our nature. We are more than our emotions, right?
And animals tend to show affection, right?
Yeah, right.
But they do it instinctually. They don't do it. They don't do it freely.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're not persons. And so, even though it's a great feeling when you come home and the dog is wagging the tail and jumping on you, this isn't freely chosen and it's not personal. Therefore, what?
Therefore, it's not actually love, because love has to be voluntary. I can't put a gun to my wife's head and say, you better love me or else, right? Then it wouldn't be, whatever I got back, even if it were something good, it wouldn't be love.
Or if it's simply an instinctual response to a desire, that too, even though it might be infatuation, or what our culture calls being in love, it's not really love.
Sure, right.
Because it's not freely chosen by our own volition.
And just like Bob Seger's song, I used her, she used me, neither one cared, they're both getting their desires fulfilled. But is that love? You know, I have yet to see a Hallmark card that says, I use you, you use me, happy Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not out there.
People that use each other, like so many people do today, don't send each other cards about it.
No.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right.
All right, so we talked about the negative. We talked about how the increase in our society, there seems to be an increase and a correlation between objectifying persons and humanizing animals. What is the cure to this? How do we begin to reverse this trend?
I think we just have to understand what a human being is and keep that in mind.
We've lost sight of what a human being is, even though we are human
beings. Exactly. And I think we instinctively do this. Like when we're raising our children and they take something from another kid, we say, how would you feel if somebody did that to you? We're trying to get at a very childlike level, empathy, sympathy. Right?
Yeah.
For another human being. Right? And we're just dealing at the emotional level at that point. How would you feel if somebody did that?
Do you think people are capable of that today if they're obsessed or addicted with sensual pleasure?
I think they're capable of it, but I think it's like any other addiction or obsession that you have to find your way out of it before you're capable.
And I guess let's get to the bottom line here. How do you find your way out of this woods that so many people are lost in today?
Oh, you know, I think you have to spend time in quiet prayer and reflection. You have to look inside at yourself and then project that onto other people.
And when you say reflection and prayer, God must be involved.
Yeah, You're praying to someone.
Just
right?
like any 12-step program, a higher power needs to help you out of the quicksand right. that you found yourself in.
Right. Don't be traumatized by all this inhumanity to you and to others. Rise above it. Have sympathy, empathy, and charity.
By God's help.
Yeah.
All right, fellow person. I don't see you as an object, Mr. Kent. You are a personal guest.
I don't feel like an object.
A personal guest whom is going to be with me next month. Thank you very much for joining me this month.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. See you back next week. Right after this, Cindy's Vinyl Vault. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.